Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Jordan Hawkins sat on the middle stool, inspecting amber beer bottles as they spun by her lamp. Built out of sky blue sheets of metal and plopped in the middle of a paved lot, Glass and Company offered the highest paying factory jobs in Connecticut's eastern corner. 24 hours a day, fluorescent light shone over the lines and the furnace blasted dry heat over the workers, finding moisture and sucking it back up into the air. This is G.P. Gottlieb, host for New Books and Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. And today I'm talking to Suzanne Davis. Her novel, Gravity Hill, tells the intertwining stories of an environmental disaster in eastern Connecticut, based on an actual disaster that became a Superfund cleanup site, a car accident and its consequences, and a young woman whose life is irreversibly changed after her brother's death. Hi, Suzanne. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Glee. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So your book is titled Gravity Hill, which is just a couple of miles from where your family still operates the family dairy farm. What do you love about where you grew up, and how did you decide to write a book about it?
Well, I love the environment. I love the beauty of the land there. It's been described by other people as being a kind of raw beauty because there's very little development there. And it's a place that has always stirred my soul because the people there have just powerful stories that have influenced really the way I think about our human experience.
Today is your launch day. Congratulations. And my question is, what do you think is going to happen when people from the area where you grew up read a story, a novel about that area? Are they going to see themselves?
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I got a message through Facebook from someone in the area saying, oh my goodness, Gravity Hill. I live right next to Gravity Hill. And this is someone who I don't know, but who obviously is excited or interested about Gravity Hill getting a place in fiction. I would say that people might see some of the things that have taken place in the town. For example, there is, as you know from the book, an environmental subplot, and that is based on a real occurrence that happened in the town. So I'm sure people will see that. There is a mystery attached to it, which has really not ever been solved. And so they might find it interesting to see the way that makes it into fiction. And of course, the rural farm family perhaps could be seen as a composite of rural people from the area.
You write that this quiet corner of eastern Connecticut is more like Appalachia than the wealthy part west of the river. Is it really referred to as the quiet corner? And can you say more about that?
Yes, it is referred to as the quiet corner. And it is part of the last green corridor in the East. So it's a very important section environmentally that runs all the way to Washington, D.C. And people find their way out there for biking, cycling, long runs. People go out there actually to go and see Gravity Hill itself. And that's its beauty.
We meet your protagonist as she's working in a bottle factory. Can you please introduce Jordan?
So Jordan is the protagonist of the story. It's her deep concern and grief over the death of her brother that have her working at the glass factory, having given up her college scholarship. And she's committed to both helping her family through this, but also committed to finding the truth of how it is that her brother and two other boys were at the site of the accident the night that it happened.
Mm-hmm. What's going on with Jordan's father, Sam?
So Sam is a farmer who is very invested in the legacy of the land and his own commitment to continuing that legacy and his feeling that his son Clay should have been the one to continue that legacy. And there were very deep family divisions, particularly between Sam and Clay, about what Clay's future should be.
Why is the Environmental Protection Agency concerned about the farm, and why specifically are they interested in the Hartford fern?
So this actually is, the Hartford fern is a real thing and is, or at least was for a very long time, on the endangered species list. And so it grows on the banks of the river in the novel, the Quonduct River. And they're concerned because they can see that there's some wear and distress upon the fern, and they don't. So that's a clue to them that there's something off with the environment. And their initial concern is to try to protect the health of the fern, but secondarily, they become suspicious of what's going on in the environment that's causing the distress.
So do they really come out like that and send people to look at a fern?
They do. And they also give homeowners, farmers, other landowners certificates for their agreement to do safe practices that will protect endangered species.
What happened to the textile mill that was there, and why is it now an industrial park?
So that textile mill, it burned down and in a mysterious way. And this, as I mentioned, is something that actually happened in the town that the novel is based upon. And so the textile mill I don't know if you want me to answer the question for the novel or for the real life here.
Both. It's both. Interesting, okay. To compare.
Yeah. So in real life, there was a textile mill called the Revere Textile Mill, and it dyed fabric in its most recent iteration. And so I remember as a kid on the school bus, the dye being dumped into the river, and we would always look to see what color the river was that day. It was like the most brilliant neon orange, or, you know, like the most brightest yellow or fire engine red. and all those dyes would just get dumped into the river. And then I guess it would have been the 70s, maybe the early 80s, when some of the environmental laws changed and those chemicals could no longer be dumped into the river, they were supposed to be sent by barrels to proper kinds of, dump sites. And what happens in this case, in real life and in the book, is something very different. And it's what causes the sort of mystery of this environmental subplot. So I won't say more.
Oh, wow. Yeah, don't say more. Okay. Now the town's only industry is a tire burning plant in the book. What? Why? Why was it put there? And why can't they recycle all those tires? And we already knew about pollution by the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
So what's going on? What's going on there?
Well, I will tell you that the tire burning plant was actually brought in the 1990s. So even later than that. And I think as the dialogue about environmental awareness has sort of sharpened in the decades, we know that environmental hazards often get placed in communities where people are busy just trying to pay their bills and keep their families together and maybe don't have the resources of time and legal representation to go and advocate for keeping those things out of their community. And to be fair, often, and it happens in this case, that the tire burning plant in the book, it promised the people jobs, and for the people who had lost their jobs when the mill burns down, they are, they have no industry. They're in a very remote corner, and they need jobs.
It's the old story.
Yeah.
It's still happening.
Yeah.
Two other boys died in the same crash that killed her. Jordan's brother. Can you say something about those two boys?
Yes. So the two boys who were killed with clay were Jimmy Barbo and Clay's best friend, which funny right at this moment, what is happening here?
Don't worry. Even say it.
They got into the same vehicle. Clay was driving the vehicle. It was not his vehicle. So there are questions right from the start about why it is that he was driving. They all were tested as having a blood alcohol over the acceptable limit, but Clay's just barely so. And Jimmy Barbo was thrown from the car. So he did not die immediately, but Clay and the other boy did. Tim was the name of the other boy. And so the Barbo parents have to go through the experience of losing their son, but being with him in the hospital while he is dying over a period of days. And so there's a tremendous amount of grief, and they decide to bring a lawsuit against Jordan's family. And that connects back to the mystery that is that Jordan tries to figure out throughout the course of the book.
Mm-hmm. We haven't spoken yet about her mother. Can you introduce Diane?
So Diane, to me, was a very interesting character to write. When I started writing her, she was not a very she wasn't all that dynamic. And after I got done with a draft of the book, I understood that there was so much more nuance to her. She was very protective of Clay and had been concerned about the way her husband was putting so much pressure on Clay to take over the farm when he didn't want to take over the farm. And so the way she's grieving the death of her son is complicated by the anger that she feels toward her husband. And Clay's death happens just at a time when she's begun to explore this sort of growing organic vegetables and the slow food movement and wanting to move away from her job as a nurse to this other life that she's so much more interested in and that gives her a greater sense of community. And so she's also, you know, a bit angry at Jordan because she feels that if Jordan had only been more supportive of Clay rather than, as she saw it, sort of caring about her own interest of getting herself off to college, that perhaps things could have turned out better and differently for Clay. So over the course of the book, the relationships that she has with both Jordan and with her husband have an arc of growth. And it's really as a result, I think, of her, of the two of them, Sam and Jordan, acknowledging the ways that she might have been right about what she had been trying to say before Clay's death.
Mm-hmm. Another character we've neglected is the river. It really is like a character. Can you say more?
Yeah. So the river is, it's a symbol, but honestly, it is just the center of life for people there in the town, and it runs along Gravity Hill. It's a place where the kids have gone from the time they're young to swim to then when they're teenagers for whatever rebellious or romantic moments that they've had. It is a place where people go fishing. It's a place that holds, I would say, generational memories. And by the nature of that running water, it is a kind of portal that allows the characters, when they're near the river, to access those domains that sometimes seem further away when we're doing just the mundane tasks of life.
Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you. So Jordan wasn't expecting a relationship. Can you say a little bit without giving anything away?
Yeah. Well, so there is a mysterious fisherman who is introduced at the very beginning of the book, and it turns out that he is in town because he is a cousin to Tim Hatch, who was Clay's best friend. And Jordan recognizes when she encounters him at the memorial service that the town holds, that his grief is like hers. And that spark of connection between them unfolds into further connection, which I won't say much about. But she sees that he is a man, not a boy, and he is also a man who has been through grief before. And there's something in the way he is able to navigate the intersection of love and loss that is very appealing to her.
Mm-hmm. It's a lovely novel. It makes me want to go see, you know, visit Connecticut. I think I've only passed through.
But
I don't know if I've ever been in that part of it. It doesn't ring a bell. but it sounds gorgeous.
Well, you're welcome anytime, Kalit. And it is beautiful. I will say that I'm biased, but it's true.
Okay, when I come, coffee on me. So Suzanne, what are you working on next?
Well, I'm working on a novel that has two threads, one of a contemporary couple in Southeast Connecticut, and then the other historical thread goes back to the time of the Pequot War. And after finishing Gravity Hill, this idea of border crossings and the intersection of history and unfinished history sort of took a leap in my mind, going not just generations, but back hundreds of years. And to this, this contemporary couple is connected to an incident back through those generations near the time of the Pequot War. And so the story weaves those two threads.
Ooh, it sounds interesting. Thank you again for joining me. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Suzanne. And I wish you the best of luck with your novel, Gravity Hill.
Oh, well, thank you, Glee. It's been really fun to talk about it. And I appreciate you taking the time to read it and getting a chance to talk with you.
And thanks for joining me today. Again, this is G.P. Gottlieb, author of the Whipped and Sipped Mystery Series and host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I've been talking to Suzanne Davis, author of Gravity Hill. Hope you're able to relax with a delicious book today. Also tomorrow. Happy reading.